Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, joined by a special guest, Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans. Andy, Friday, we called this a must-win Sunday's game against New Orleans. They did not. So what happens going forward? We'll talk about that next.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes Saturdays and Sundays. We get this thing up as fast as we possibly can for you, so there's always content out there. Lakers content available for you wherever you get them, and always for free. Make another Locked On podcast, perhaps Locked On Pelicans with Jake Madison, your second listen to hear some saucy Pelicans fans talking on Monday. You can go there. Want to let everybody know as well that Monday's episode of Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. Oh, man alive. So, Jake, welcome.
Thanks for having me on. This was, I don't even know where to begin here, right? That was something on Sunday night.
Yeah, 116-108, the final score. The Lakers give away it was 23-point lead, I believe, Andy and Jake, at its apex. Lakers fans certainly, I don't want to say saw it coming, but we're certainly prepared for the possibility, because it's been that kind of year. LeBron James, this is a terrible game on every level. So they blow the game. Now the Lakers are a half game behind New Orleans for the 9-10. New Orleans now has the tiebreaker, so the Lakers have to jump New Orleans clean to have the 9 and host that game. And oh, by the way, they're only a game in front of San Antonio now, who play the Blazers twice, I believe, down the stretch. And LeBron hurt his ankle really bad and doesn't appear to be able to play on Tuesday, at least right now. Jake, how was your night? Because it didn't go well for the Lakers.
You know, the first half, I was feeling pretty bad. I was actually with a bunch of friends at the game, kind of taking it in as a fan. And one of them looks at me at halftime, which I think it was 20 at half. It was like, should we just leave right now? Kind of feeling like that was the way that it was going to go. But it's one of those things you got to like hang out for that one a little bit. And clearly the night got turned around and Pelicans fans were like frothing at the mouth for this win by the very end of it, I think.
I would just say, have you ever seen the Lakers play? If you're going to leave at halftime. Of course you don't leave at halftime.
It's a common sports cliche to say this, but this truly was a tale of two halves. I mean, the first half, the Lakers were absolutely dominant and in control of this game. And you know, the Pelicans made a few pushes and the Lakers were able to just keep, you know, taking their best shot, adding to it. And it really felt like the Lakers had figured out what they needed to do to control this thing throughout the second half. And like we said, win a must-win scenario for this one. But then in the second half, you know, Frank Vogel talked about this afterwards and sort of other guys on the team, like, the Pelicans adjusted well to what the Lakers had been doing in the first half. The Lakers did not respond well to those adjustments. I also thought, Jake, and I'm curious what you think about this, it felt to me like the Lakers came out in the second half at the start looking to just bury the Pelicans. Like they wanted to turn this into like a 35-point lead in the first 5 minutes. And I thought they stopped doing a lot of what worked for them in terms of moving the ball.
They got real sloppy.
Capitalizing on New Orleans mistakes as opposed to just going for home run shots. And it to put it kindly, did not work.
Yeah, that's safe to say. There were a couple things I thought, right? Like, I agree with you. In the first half, the Lakers absolutely dominated. But in watching that game, part of one of the reasons why I didn't leave at halftime was I thought some of that was unsustainable. Some of the shooting that we were seeing from LeBron James was unsustainable, right? You saw Russell Westbrook hit two threes in the first half, or at least one, and he wasn't missing shots. And like, we know how his season has gone a little bit. And so this game to me had some sort of sense of like a regression to the mean second half, which I think you saw happen. So when you said they're coming out trying to hit these big haymakers, playmakers, a Will Smith slap, if you will, right, to kind of end this game right then and there. I couldn't resist, you know, and they weren't hitting those threes. They weren't hitting those shots because you weren't going to shoot 60% from three all game long. They seemed to panic a little bit and get a little bit rattled and started trying to force things. So you saw way more isolation from the Lakers in the second half and forcing shots. And that just wasn't what they were doing early on. There was dribble penetration from them in the first half, make that defense collapse and then just find the open guy eventually after a couple of passes. And they went away from that. They seemed rattled. They seemed a little panicked at times too. And then New Orleans kind of followed the playbook of, you know, as you said, right? You knew this was a chance that it could happen to the Lakers because it's happened this season. And the way a lot of these teams,
you're going to have to be more specific, Jake.
Yes, right. Like the way the Pistons came back and overcame that deficit to win that game was by pounding the ball inside and scoring points in the paint. And New Orleans started to do that. And that's when they seemed to start to just chip away at that lead. And when they gained it for good in the middle of the fourth or so, it seemed like they weren't going to end up relinquishing that. At that point, the Lakers looked completely shell-shocked. Then you also had that moment in the third quarter of Trey Murphy going up after that offensive rebound, getting that dunk where he got a pretty weak tech on taunting. Horrible. And like that seemed to kind of galvanize the team a little bit and like added a little bit of like FU to them for the rest of the game. And I think that really also helped propel New Orleans. He had 16 points in that third quarter and really sparked that team. Because as much as you can, you know, get stops on Lakers, you also need to score yourself. And they had struggled with that. And he started getting them playing a little bit more downhill. And that's really where you saw the game change. So it's a combination of like regression to the mean for the Lakers and New Orleans stepping up and adjusting well.
Yeah, I mean, that's you nailed it when you were talking about like why you don't leave at halftime. I make the joke all the time, like, well, not all the time, because this doesn't happen enough to make it all the time, where where you say, why did Frank Vogel get away from the Lakers make all of their shots strategy? It seems to be working. And that to me was what I was waiting for in the second half. Like, what happens when they're not hitting every shot, like all of them? Westbrook's hitting the stuff inside and he's, you know, hitting the three. And you mentioned LeBron is making every crazy three-pointer, including that one from like half court or whatever. Like that's, I mean, LeBron has actually shot the ball pretty well from the perimeter. And then the other thing is, it was pretty clear to me that as soon as LeBron hurt his ankle, he wasn't leaving the game, but he wasn't moving well.
He didn't miss one possession. He didn't miss one possession, played almost 42 minutes in this one.
Yeah. This was one of those things though. I mean, Brian and I were texting about this during the game, Jake, just LeBron was in this situation where I think he felt like if I sit, it's just going to swell up more. It's going to stiffen more. I'm not going to be able to play through this. We were saying like LeBron would have been able to finish a triple overtime game easier than if there had been like a 5-minute stoppage because of the clock or a fan spilled a drink or something like that.
I suggested that they actually schedule their remaining 7 or 8 games just right afterwards. You can play them all on the New Orleans court, bring Dallas and just run them all through, play them all. Because LeBron, once he sits down, it will not surprise me. He, after the game, talked about the significant pain he was in. He talked about burning. He talked about things like, he did not use any adjectives that sounded at all good. And while we will not know until Tuesday, probably, that whether or not he's going to play in the Dallas game or for how many games he might miss, it did not sound to me, Andy, at least, like he was going to play in that game.
Well, he described the pain level that he was currently feeling as horrible, and I don't think he meant it like in the most positive sense of horrible.
You did mention, before we get back to the playoff race, and I want to, maybe we'll do that after the break, Jake, nice aside after the game, Murphy had his parents at the game. His mom, it was his mom's birthday, and a very limpy and obviously pained LeBron on his way out, he asked if he would, you know, for his mom's birthday, take a picture with her. And he did, LeBron did, which is kind of cool. And it turned into a really nice moment. You know, something good came out of this game.
No, that was cool. You got to like stuff like that, right?
I agree.
You know, as much as I think people want to hate LeBron and look, he's not the most like beloved guy for New Orleans Pelicans fans. I don't think that like one Laker is. It's still so cool to see that kind of moment and the respect these guys have for each other around the league, even after a game, right? You can set that all aside. Because as you mentioned, this game was huge for both teams. Like,
yes.
I don't think you could overstate, at least for this season, how important the stakes were in this game with a tiebreaker at stake, possession of the ninth seed at stake, and a home game with that against potentially the opponent here. This was huge. So to take his time out to do that, I thought was awesome.
All right, so let's each we'll take a second and we'll each think about it and then come back with our predictions going forward of who those last two teams are going to be, the 9 and 10, as the Pelicans, Lakers, and Spurs will head into Monday's game separated by a game and a half between them. We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. Eating smart and eating enjoyably, it's never been better before because now you can treat yourself without feeling guilty with Built Bars. If you've not tried the Puffs, you are missing out on one of Built Bar's best tasting bars. The first ever protein-infused marshmallow, fluffy, marshmallowy, but not just a protein bar. They're a treat covered in 100% real chocolate. They're a fan favorite, incredible flavors like cinnamony churro, coconut marshmallow, banana cream pie. They're all going to be your new favorite. And they're all, again, covered in 100% real chocolate. And unlike a typical candy bar, which is usually 200 to 300 empty calories of bleh, most Built Bars contain just 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, but 17 grams of protein. That's the good stuff. It's the opposite of bleh. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, get 15% off your order. Again, promo code LOCKED15, 15% off at built.com. I'm impressed, Brian, by my ability to get perfect, exact replication of tone each time.
Yeah, and by the way, describe if there was a way to summarize the Lakers season in one short sound, I think that was it. Yep. So, Jake, you may remember moments ago when I asked you to think about what you think the final standings will be for that 9, 10, and gone fishing seeding in the West. I have long maintained that the Lakers would finish 10th. Like they had no, that the Pelicans would absolutely pass them. I've said this for weeks, just based on the schedule and the way that the Lakers were playing. I had thought about a week and a half ago that the Lakers were still going to finish in the top 10 only because San Antonio didn't seem particularly interested in moving up. They do now. How do you think this is going to go? Who do you think makes it and who's left out?
Yeah, it's tighter than I think we were all expecting. I think in one of our Locked On water coolers here, Andy was like, oh yeah, there's no way that the Spurs can get the 10th seed. It's just like a math thing at this point. Now all of a sudden, because they beat New Orleans, right? Because they beat the Pelicans on Saturday, the day before this game, it makes it way more interesting than we were thinking.
This is probably, Jake, a time worth noting after I said the math wouldn't allow it. My senior year of high school, I had an outside tutor twice a week so I could maintain a D in math. Like, I've always been really, really bad at it. Like, if my high school had not taken mercy on me, I might still be there taking math.
He's not the Locked On Lakers numbers guy. He's more of an eye test fellow. So, I mean,
there you go. The stats,
well, I understand what the deep stats mean. Just don't ask me to add any of them.
Right. No, I'm just,
there you go. I understand per, but if you put a bunch of per, I think
it's still
going to
be Pelicans
carry
and Lakers,
the one. Here we go. So you think the Lakers are going to stay in?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I look at San Antonio and their remaining schedule of like these three teams. It seems like it's the hardest, I think, going forward with some of those games. You know, they get Portland in there, and Portland is just doing
twice,
like a
tank
job. Yeah, shameless tank job at this point. But those are some of those are the two more winnable games. They still have games, I think, against Minnesota, against Dallas, the Nuggets in there too. Like, those are going to be tough for them. And again, you look at that Spurs team, right? You've got Murray and then a bunch of other, like, not terrible things, but nothing all of that great. And so if they catch the right team on the right night, they may get that win. But overall, I'm still not a big believer in that Spurs team. But maybe this comes down to LeBron James and his ankle, right? We've seen that he can carry this Lakers team really, really far, and that he's still capable of putting up 50 points fairly regularly right now, you know, even at his age. I don't like rooting against things like that. So I kind of still put the Lakers in at 10th. I do think New Orleans is probably going to get 9th at this point. But look, I wouldn't rule out the Spurs fully. It's Greg Popovich, and I feel like that is a foolish thing. It's also sad, the area I was watching the game in the Smoothie King Center, there was a guy who looked exactly like Greg Popovich wearing a Los Angeles Rams hat, to the point where like two people had to like walk over and kind of like stare at him a little bit to make sure it wasn't wasn't him. And I thought that'd be probably the perfect disguise for Popovich if you just wanted to be incognito watching a game somewhere else, is wearing something
they
like
have
that.
Tape, but he doesn't need to physically travel there, I think, to get
right. Like, you don't need to also let alone in like the standing room only bar to watch game.
You barely need to watch this team to scout it, much less be there.
It's not needed. Like, Andy D, because San Antonio, my understanding, I believe based on conference record, owns the tiebreaker over the Lakers.
Every team owns the tiebreaker against
Oklahoma Lakers. City owns the tiebreaker over the Lakers, should that become relevant. If I had to put money on it based on the schedule and LeBron's ankle and the possible return of AD, who, by the way, we're going to get into here in a second, Joel Myers taking shots at Anthony Davis at the end of the broadcast. Salty. Joel Myers is a salty guy anyway, but Andy, do you think they're going to get in? Because if I were a betting man, I actually would put my money on the Spurs and not the Lakers.
I mean, I got to know what's going on with LeBron's ankle, because that's obviously going to make a difference. But you also just wonder about this team's collective spirit. And I say this as somebody who has spent the last four games thinking that things could be different, because things really had seemed different, not just through the eye test, but from hearing guys talk about it. And the players that Frank Vogel had settled on playing, guys that really seemed to really want to make the most out of this season at this point. And I think seemed most capable of it, you know, the young legs and sort of like a, you know, a different place in your career where there's nothing to even be jaded about. You're too busy trying to make sure that you've got a next job. And LeBron had been seeming to show like a surge of connection and I think resolve that hadn't always been there, you know, throughout the course of this season, but often over consecutive games. But this one seemed to really take a lot out of him from a psychological standpoint. Like LeBron asked about, you know, a few different questions about what the F, man, how did this happen? He had an interesting quote when he just said, "We are who we are."
Yep. And he did not mean that as a compliment, by the way. That was not, I mean, you know, it was, we are who we are. And like, I took it to mean there's not like some sort of magical transformation coming here. Like this is what we are. We are a team that gives away leads. We are a team that gets hurt a lot. We are a team that can't get over the hump, you know, in terms of a week's worth of good luck. Like,
and I was going to say, and also, we are a team that at times plays well enough that you can even start the cycle of trying to buy into this a little bit, whether you're talking about themselves buying into it, whether you're talking like us, whether you're talking about fans, or, you know, whether you're even talking about like the Locked On Pelicans fans who jumped into the last,
oh my God, YouTube. They were. So we did on Friday, we did a show where Andy, you know, about the, you know, Russell Westbrook and other guys calling this a must-win game. And Andy said, this is a game the Lakers should win.
Should be able to win. Okay. I did not make a predict. Well, no. But
no,
just
you, no, you didn't say that they would. You just said that they should be able to.
Should be able to win this game. It was
God, man. The Pelican, I didn't even know they knew about our channel. And they were all over this thing. I mean, they were angry. Yeah. At the unmitigated gall of Andy,
yes,
saying that the Lakers ought to be able to beat the Pelicans, pointing out all kinds of things, as if, by the way, no disrespect to the Pelicans, who I just said are going to finish ahead of the Lakers. And I don't pick the Lakers to beat anybody. It's not like the Pelicans are 16 games over 500 or something. They're not, you know, the returning NBA champions here. Why are Pelicans fans so damn salty about? Is this about the Lakers? Is this about Anthony Davis, who Joel Myers taking shot at, saying that's all, folks?
That was pretty good, Anthony Davis is on camera.
Was a good line. Well played, Joel.
Joel Myers, the Pelicans announcer, for people who don't remember, actually, when he used to be the Lakers announcer.
Lakers broadcaster, which is probably one of the reasons he's happy to take shots. Joel's an interesting fellow. But so what is the source of that? Like, why are Pelicans fans all over our channel right now? And certainly will be on Monday.
What do they have against this little team, Jake?
Right, this little upstart.
This little mom and pop franchise. Why are they picking on them?
Lakers, right? I saw some of that because I got tagged in it too, where they're just like, oh, this is what they put on Locked On. And I'm like, you guys, I'm not head of the network. I just host my show. Like, leave me out of this here.
Those a-holes in LA do their thing. Yeah, I do mine. It's like,
yeah, man, I don't associate with them. They're jerks or something like that. And it's funny, right? Like, it's a prideful group, you know, and I think they're kind of, they've hit a boiling point this season of where it feels like national media kind of craps on New Orleans and craps on the Pelicans a lot. You hear it right all the time of Zion should be in New York, or Zion should go to this team, get him out of there. Even if there's not like overt stuff about that, maybe some stuff behind the scenes that leads to some of that. But, you know, a history of players wanting out in Chris Paul, then Anthony Davis. Now we've got Zion and they're kind of going through this again. And it feels like they're sick of it. And so they had a moment earlier on in the year where JJ Redick on Twitter said something and someone called him out for it. It's like, there's only like 12 of you all, like, leave me alone here. And so now they're calling themselves the Pels 12, kind of in response to that. It was like this tweet that like brought the whole group together. So like, if you say something wrong about the Pelicans, they are going to come after you in force. So it's not just the Lakers, it's really anyone that does it. But there's a special hatred for the Lakers because of the Anthony Davis deal. You know, when he at first asked for a trade, everyone was actually okay with it, right? The Dell Demps era here was terrible, and they just did not get it right around him despite having this generational player. So he wanted out and everyone kind of understood it. There were no burning of his jersey or anything like that. It was like, we appreciate you. Thank you. Like, yeah, go and do your thing. We failed you. And then that started to get really acrimonious where Rich Paul and Clutch tried to force him to the Lakers, right? Like, they did everything they could and went full on scorched earth to try and make that happen to a certain degree. And I think that just rubbed people so much the wrong way that basically no matter what, it was like, screw that team. So a lot of this is also anger at Clutch with that all. So that's really where that comes from. And then it culminated in one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen, which was the Anthony Davis That's All shirt, wearing that in the final game there. And then it was like everything he said after, right? Where he said like, oh, I don't pick out my clothes. I have to wear what's laid out for me. And it's just,
what are you, like, 12?
Come on. Yeah, like, it's the dumbest thing.
If it makes the Pelican fans and Locked On Pelican listeners feel better, this was something Brian and I called out as BS, like the idea that he didn't know what shirt he was wearing. Well, I mean,
it's the dumbest thing.
Yeah,
you're an adult. You can't. You can't.
I mean, like, this is where I thought of when you said that.
Like, let me put it this way: if that was actually true, don't admit it. Like, that's embarrassing as hell. Like, if that actually is what happened, like, you just took the clothes that your assistant, who apparently has like a really snide sense of humor, just wear them and you don't take a look at what you're wearing. Like, I mean, that is not something to actually
make public.
You're trolling.
Own it. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. It's not hard to do.
I'm burning bridges. I hate this place. I want out.
Like, but you know what? Okay. So
I'm giving double middle fingers. Are you all this stupid? Read my shirt. What the hell do you think it means?
Read the apron. So it brings up an interesting point though, like, because both of these teams obviously are not, I would say, I mean, I think the hope, and you can correct me if I'm wrong after the break, that I feel like New Orleans sort of hoped they'd be a little further along than this, through the year. The Lakers certainly had a different roadmap for where things would be. You know, a couple years after the AD trade, who's winning? We'll ask that question next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Top Shot, NBA's Top Shot, the officially licensed NFT of the NBA. Connect with a community of hundreds of thousands of NBA fans as a natural progression of fantasy sports, a way to upgrade your experience as an NBA fan. This is the future of what being an NBA fan looks like. It's part trading cards, except instead of cardboard, you've got officially licensed NFTs of the greatest moments from NBA history. It's part NBA stock market, because every day millions of dollars worth of NFTs are traded back and forth. It's part fantasy sports, because you can capitalize on the market if you're able to predict top performers. And there are prizes for the loyalty program to boot. Investors include Academy Award winner Will Smith, scattered around the world. Investors also include.
You want to talk about an NFT? Wow. Yeah,
that is a serious NFT.
Sometimes the copy just sneaks up on you like that.
It really does. NBA players in the community include Tyrese Halliburton, Cole Anthony, Harrison Barnes, and it's about having ownership.
Wait, no, I'm sorry. He's not part of it.
Well, one of them's got to go. It's about having an ownership stake in the NBA's greatest highlights. So if you sign up for Top Shot today, the best way to start is by getting yourself a starter pack. You can pull an NFT of a superstar like LeBron or Kevin Durant, or star rookies like Cade Cunningham or Evan Mobley for just $9. And if you didn't get your favorite player from the starter pack, you can snag moments from the marketplace. NBA Top Shot is the future of being an NBA fan. Own officially licensed rare NFTs of the greatest moments from NBA history. Sign up today at lockedon.nbatopshot.com.
Locked On Lakers also brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. And why endure the often pointless or intimidating questioning? Is your Honda Odyssey, is an LX or an EX? I don't like the way the tone of their voice when they do that. And you got to wait there while they order the parts in the computer. You don't know if they're getting the best thing for your car or if they're just trying to dust off something in the stock room and get it out of there to make room for more things. So you save time and you save money when you're using Rock Auto. You don't spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or dealership. Jake, do you know how much a Honda Odyssey fuel pump costs at a chain store? I bet you do.
I actually do. And I work on all of my own cars and have a classic car that I'm working on, and I get all
the
of
classic
my
Honda Odyssey
auto.com.
Yeah,
pretty much. Right. It gets no better than that.
It's $353 is the answer to the question. And I bet you probably know then too, how much you can get that fuel pump from Rock Auto. $216. That's way less. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in there. How did you hear about us, Box? So they know we sent you. Again, rockauto.com right now. And you write Locked On in there. How did you hear about us, Box? Yeah, Andy and I don't fix our own cars. That is not something we do. Okay, so how many years now are we outside the AD trade? We're on year three,
this is the third, yeah.
Who's winning?
Good question, right? This year kind of opens it up for a debate. Before this, I would have said the Lakers, right? Like, look, you got a championship. That is the goal in all of this, right? That is going to be the overriding thing. And at that point, because of that alone, I don't know if you can say the Pelicans have won at any point in time unless they basically win a title in the next year or two. But it's closer now than it was before, right? You know, you kind of alluded to it, I think, in the first segment when we were talking about this, that, you know, it's closer because it almost feels like one title with LeBron James in LA is bad. It's a disappointment and it's not what it should have been. So if we're kind of gauging it against expectations, this is a lot thinner than it would have been before. Yeah, the title is what you want. That stays with you forever. But it feels like there's missed opportunities here for the Lakers. And then you're going to have to go through a long rebuild. This is not something that is going to be easy to fix. And if LeBron just decides to up and leave, and I don't know if he will or not, right? It screws you even more on all of this. This is one of those things where it might take 5 years to get back into the playoffs once they decide to try and tear this all down. So then all of a sudden you're looking at potentially a decade or so without a title. Yeah, that's not ideally what you want, particularly because the title came on the front end of all of that, right? It's not like it kind of came in the middle of this run, which maybe balances it a little bit more. So because of that, it's closer. But it's definitely still the Lakers winning the trade. But if New Orleans is able to figure it out, if they are better, you know, able to kind of get better than they are and can even simply get to a finals, let's say, I think they're going to feel pretty good about it. So when you're judging it in and of itself, looking at them two head to head, yeah, it's the Lakers. But when you look at it in the grander context and against expectations, I think it's a lot closer.
It's funny, Andy. I just wanted to ask you this because Jake said, you know, he mentioned like, you know, if they decide to tear it down, which is a prospect that we've talked about, like what if they did that? Even if that, but you know, the opposite side of that, Andy, is that it's sort of antithetical to how the Lakers operate. Even if they don't decide to tear it down, they're in a really, really bad spot, a really tricky spot with Anthony Davis seeming to be unable to stay on the floor, LeBron James getting older, and no draft picks like anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, Jake, you're correct that like, the winning a championship end of this can't be overlooked. It was also the expectation. You know what I mean? Like, in some respects, the championship was the baseline for getting Anthony Davis. It was like the justification for doing it. So how much do you win based off just meeting the justification? But then the flip side of it, and this is what I think is fascinating for the Pelicans, who did well in that trade. You know, they did very well in terms of the draft capital, which, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, has not been entirely... There's still more to get realized in terms of everything that comes from.
Have you used much of any of it?
Potentially this season too, by the way. Like, if the Lakers pick lands in the top 10, it comes to New Orleans. So there's a realistic possibility that's like a best case scenario for New Orleans is you host the Lakers in that play-in tournament game, knock them out, then that pick jumps into the top four and New Orleans gets it. You know,
because right, it's only you've only had one pick from the trade, right? There's so many. Yeah, of them.
They were structured so weirdly and kicked as far down the road, knowing that maybe this kind of would end up happening to the Lakers.
But what I think is interesting about it, though, is as far as the players that you got, you no longer have Lonzo Ball, and Lonzo ended up seemingly, from the outside looking in, pretty inexplicably just kind of booted out the door. Like, it seemed like the organization decided pretty early on, for reasons that I know from the outside didn't really make much sense, that they kind of lost interest in Lonzo. And then Josh Hart got traded, granted, for CJ McCollum, who is a very good player. And you could look at this right now as upgrading from Anthony Davis to, or at least moving on from Anthony Davis to, Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum, TBD. And is there anything I'm forgetting from that?
Yeah, they also brought in Jonas Valanciunas with the Memphis Grizzlies. That's how that pick ended up kind of going to Memphis. Okay. So they get it if it's not in the top 10, and then New Orleans keeps it from like the protections that are done. So in a sense, it is some draft capital, right, in future years. Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum, and Valanciunas, which like I think is still a pretty good return overall, particularly because Brandon Ingram has blossomed as a player. He's probably having, really despite the injuries this year, his best
year. We loved B.I. when he was in L.A.
Yeah.
We were, as we like to say, big proponents of Brandon Ingram before it was fashionable.
Right.
But
even those pick swaps, the pick swaps are pretty valuable too. Like, this is where I think too, like, you know, when Lakers fans talk about just blow it up, I don't think they get, because let's say like blowing it up, does that mean you keep Russell Westbrook this offseason? Because to get rid of him almost certainly requires at least one draft pick, probably two. And they only have two that they have to work with. You know, does that mean trading Westbrook and then you try to trade AD and you try to trade LeBron and try to get picks back for all that stuff? I mean, like, they have so little. I don't think they understand necessarily how difficult it is to build up a championship caliber team again. That's certainly something that they understand in New Orleans.
I mean, if you were to blow it up and those are the assets, right? Like, there's none there. I co-host Locked On NBA too, and we talk about this with the Lakers all the time, and particularly in a season like this, of like, what do you do, right? Like, there's, you know, at the trade deadline, there was no move to really be made for them because there were no picks and no salary that really worked. And you need to kind of have like tiered salary, right? You need to have those really low guys, but you need to have people in that $10 million range to be able to package and make other trades with, to include almost as like salary ballast or something along those lines. And then those top guys, and they don't have any of that. So if you were to trade LeBron James away, okay, so you get a bunch of picks and like a young guy, same for Anthony Davis, you're hoping those picks are going to turn into Anthony Davis and or a LeBron James. So you may as well keep what you know, it's bird in hand kind of situation, right? Like, that's the thing that I think people lose sight of. It's like, oh, trade this guy. You know, he's 30, he's old. Your best case scenario is getting that dude again. But it's so much of that is hit or miss, right? Like, look how many guys drafted don't work out. It's not the easiest thing to do. It sounds great to say it as if being a GM is easy in this league, and New Orleans has gone through it, right? Like, look at the Oklahoma City Thunder right now. Their rebuild has been set back 2 or 3 years because they didn't get a blue chip draft guy in this past draft. So they're all of a sudden spinning the wheels for another year or two to find that guy. If you have them, you hold on to them for dear life, I think.
Okay, that leads well to what I wanted to ask you, because you had one of those guys in Anthony Davis. You know, you're still in the waiting process with Zion, and that's a whole other thing that, you know, for I've listened to Locked On Pelicans and I've heard you talk about this, and it is fascinating. And for real, like, even if you are not a Pelicans fan, like a lot of the people listening to this, you should check out some of these shows because it's really interesting just to get into what's happened and where it's all going. But with Anthony Davis, this is something Brian and I've talked about a lot. Like, the prospect of him being the focal point or best player, most important player for an organization. And that was something that the Lakers had been hoping for when they brought him in. It wasn't just to be the number two to LeBron. It was eventually to transition from LeBron to AD. From what you've seen in covering AD those years in New Orleans, how much needs to be around him? Like, what type of players, and does he have it in him, do you think, to be the guy that ultimately is the face, the leader, you know, the son that everything revolves around?
It's a really good question, right? And I kind of went through this covering him in New Orleans with like more rose-colored glasses. And, you know, I think now that I've been able to take those off a little bit, I'm probably going to sound almost like sour about this, but I promise you I'm not. You know, we wanted him to be the guy, to be the man, right? And he just never quite delivered on that. Like, yeah, New Orleans failed him. Dell Demps was a terrible GM that didn't put the right team around him. But you've seen it, right? Like, he's on the ground a lot. He misses a lot of games, and there's always something, right? And it feels like there's some missed potential there or untapped potential in a way that I don't quite know how to explain or to kind of put in words, but I think you both kind of get what I'm trying to say. And Lakers fans listening to this probably get it too. It's just, there's something missing. He's like 90% of the way there. And at this point, well, he's been in the league for almost a decade, right? A decade this year, maybe 9 years. Like, at a certain point, like, he is who he is, right? Like, LeBron said it, right? Like, this is who we are. Like, why are people at this point, he's kind of past the potential threshold, I think, or that age where it's like, oh, he could be anything. And then you hit a level and you're like, that's what he is. I think that's what he is. I promise, I mean that objectively. It's just, he would have more playoff success even in New Orleans, and he should be able to lead that Lakers team better, but it's always something. And I don't know if that's like a fair knock on him, because injuries happen, right? And like, it's so entirely out of your control. But you've also seen it with his refusal to play center. He should be a five. He should absolutely be a five. And he doesn't want to.
He did it this year, but it's like,
yeah.
Part of it is just too, it's like the difference between like, oh, AD, look, he's putting up good numbers. It's 26 points. It's 8 rebounds, whatever. And like, holy bleep. Did you see what... Like, there's that difference between Andy and I have talked about this a lot over the course of the year. Like, putting your imprint on again, like LeBron James, like sometimes puts up numbers, but most of the time, like you know, LeBron James was there. Like, he,
yeah, you feel him, right? Like, you feel it.
You don't always feel AD, even when the numbers aren't bad. The impact, just, it's not KD. It's not one of those elite guys, and that's kind of what you need. You know, if you want to put him in the same category as Giannis and Embiid and some of these other dudes, and he's just not there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Again, it feels like he's 90% of where you imagine he should be.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, he's not going the final 10th, which would take it up to another level. I want to say one more thing, though. You mentioned how he played center this year, right? But he did that after they invested resources in Dwight Howard, because he wouldn't play center, right? Was DeAndre Jordan brought in this year or last year? I don't remember. But he finally decides to play that position. Well, that went well. But so you get what I'm saying, though, right? Like, he finally decides to start playing that position after they've made moves that limit the other things that they can do with the roster. And that hurts you.
Yeah, I mean, to put it a different way, or framing it a different way, like, AD has been willing to do it when necessary at certain times of the game. It's taken cajoling, and had he not been a part of, you know, with LeBron James pushing towards bringing in Russell Westbrook, which created a lineup where it's like, okay, this can't
possibly work without you
playing center the majority of the time. And the Lakers still tried to make it work.
Locked On Pelicans can be a fun place to be. If you're someone who wants to, or certainly the Locked On Pelicans YouTube page, for people who really want to just see people tear apart the Lakers. I don't know if you're a self-hating Lakers fan right now, but check that out. Always check out Jake Madison, though, and Locked On Pelicans. It's a great show. And when do we play again? This is like 3 days or something.
Friday, yeah. Right?
Nice.
April 1st.
All right. Might have to do a weekend show.
April Fool's Day. That'll certainly be worked in somewhere. Jake, thanks so much. This is your eighth show, and it's later where you are, where we are. Thank you very much for staying up late. We appreciate it.
No, this was fun. I appreciate talking hoops with you guys.
All right. We'll see what happens on. You get any update on LeBron Monday about Tuesday's game in Dallas? It is looking grim, but here we are. We'll see everybody Tuesday. Thanks.